It really has been a wonderful, wonderful time. And I was going to save this for the end, but I did want to just thank you because we do get an opportunity to travel quite a bit, and but there's something special. There's the hospitality that's here, the warmth and the welcome has made us feel like this is a home. And it's not the building; it's a beautiful, beautiful building. But what makes the warmth and the love here is you and your hearts, and the fact that Christ lives in your hearts. And I can tell that you are motivated by the love of Christ in what you do. And I want to thank you for that. You will all continue to be in our prayers, prayers of thanksgiving and prayers of that God would just continue to use you in His ministry here in this area and around the world. It's been a wonderful, wonderful time. And to go along with that, I, at the risk of being typecast as a one particular kind of person, that's the only kind of thing I talk about, I'm going to talk about a military kind of subject again too, but it kind of goes along with the red, white, and blue theme. I used to always wonder, why is it that when people would ask me to come and speak, they always expected me to talk about military stuff? I mean, military was a short period of time in my life compared to other things that I've done. I worked in the school system for 27 years. I've been married for 37 years. And, but the time, the short time, relatively short time that I spent in the military provided so much information for me to be able to draw lessons and learn spiritual things from that I'm still just continually drawing things out of that. And I had not even gotten to some of the 20 years of working with young kids or 30 years of being a husband and a helpmeet to my wife. The joy of walking with the Lord is that every day is a journey, every day is an adventure. And if you look to seek Him, boy, He will just fill your life with so much and make your life an adventure. And that's what's needed, is to have people whose hearts are set on walking with God. God, you and me, what do you want me to do? And like I said, it is something that's needed. And to go along with that, because you asked me about my verse for the last one, the last message, and I said Proverbs 14:12, I was thinking, gee, maybe I should come up with verses more often for the things I talk about. And I got this, I've had a thought that I've been working on, and I've spoken about it a couple times. But if I were to look at a verse, it'd probably be 1 Timothy 6:12, where Paul tells Timothy, Timothy, you know, I told you to endure hardness as a good soldier. But here, I want you to fight the good fight, Timothy. I want you to fight the good fight. I want you to be able to be prepared for the battle. I want you to be able to stay in the battle. To stay in the battle. Don't become a casualty of the war. And what I want to talk to you about today is, or tonight, is some things that I have learned from the time that I spent as a casualty of the war. I've said a number of times today that the worst time for me was when I was in the hospital. It was a frightening time. But I didn't share with you that there was another reason that my time in the hospital, those 10 months in the hospital, was a really, really difficult time for me. And not because I was fighting battles inside with my losing confidence in myself and everything, but I was fighting battles because I couldn't be out on the battlefield. I was a casualty of the war. And the Special Forces, the Green Berets, did a lot of training on preparing us for battle. They taught us a lot of skills. They taught us to be able to know how to not only apprehend those skills and apply them into our life, but how to implement them and how to use them in a day-to-day basis and how to use them in accomplishing the mission. They taught us to have confidence in those skills. They taught us to expect the unexpected, to always remain flexible. They taught us that the only constant in battle is you. So you need to know you and your strengths and what you can do and what you cannot do. There are only two constants that we were taught that are in battle. One is me. The other is my buddy. The two constants that you can always depend on in battle is you and your buddy. I mentioned this morning in the adult class that the SEALs, a friend of mine, Dick Couch, said that one of the mantras or the creeds that they try to instill in the SEALs is, what can I do for this mission to help you look better? That's the kind of heart attitude. That's the kind of attitude to be prepared for the battle that was instilled in us in the military. To be able to deal with the unexpected. The best way to be able to deal with the unexpected is to know your constants. And the only constant is you and your ability to trust your buddy. So in order to be able to fight the good fight, you needed to have confidence in those skills. You need to be able to trust your buddy. You need to be prepared for the battle. And the training was a hard preparation to try to make us ready, to try to give us the best opportunity to be on the winning side, to give us the best possibility of getting through the battle without becoming a casualty. And I thought I was a good learner, except on one particular day, April 1st. I got shot 3 times. Yeah. I wasn't really paying much attention that day. You know, it's, I guess I didn't learn some of the things as well as I should have, because I didn't keep low or didn't bend quick enough or whatever, but it was a bad day. 3 shots one day, and I found myself being a casualty of the war. And I was lying in the hospital bed in Vietnam. From there I went to Camp Zama, Japan. From there I went to Valley Forge in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. And for 10 months I laid there, not being able to be in the battle. All I could do was read about the battle. And at the time, there, in Stars and Stripes, that was the big battle. Every day there was an article about the siege at Doc Siang, because I said that we were surrounded for 30 days. Every day I would see pictures of the siege. I'd be looking at the pictures, seeing if I could recognize a face. But I had to read about what my buddies were going through. I had to read about what they were doing, and I had to deal with the guilt that I felt that I couldn't be there with them. I couldn't be where I should be. I couldn't be where I was supposed to be. I couldn't be doing what I was trained to do. I was a professional soldier. And it's no fun being a professional and sitting on the sidelines. It's no fun. You got yourself finding yourself saying, put me in, coach, put me in, put me in. I want to go in. I need to be in there. That's what I'm supposed to be doing. It's who I am. But I couldn't, because I was in a hospital bed. It was my duty, but I couldn't fulfill my duty. And for many, many years, I felt that I let my buddies down because I couldn't be there. For many years, I thought that I was responsible for the deaths of some of those people because I wasn't able to be there to help them. What I'd like to do today is, or tonight, is share with you three things that, and there's many, many more, but I picked three things for reason of time and for reason of because Dwight said, Gary, three points in a poem. You know, whenever you're going to speak, 3 points in a poem, that's it. So I'm going to limit three things that I have learned that'll take you out of the battle. Three things that will make you a casualty of the war. And three things that'll put you on the sidelines. Three things that will undermine your ability to fight the good fight. I shared this morning that there was a quote by a Christian author, John Eldridge. And he said that until we come to terms with the fact that we live our lives in the context of war as Christians, we are going to misinterpret or misunderstand 90% of what happens to us in life. Many times things will happen to us and we'll say, my gosh, where'd that come from? What happened? Why did that happen to me? It happened to you because we're in a war. Our enemy's Satan. Paul said you need to be armed with the full armor of God. Satan goes around like a roaring lion, seeking who he can devour. It's a terrible, terrible battle out there. But I have a fear that in much of Christianity, maybe not much, but I do travel around a little bit, and when I get a chance to talk with people, I notice a couple things, and it causes me concern. And again, it goes back to my hospital bed experience. When I was in the hospital bed, I'd be reading about the siege of Daxiang, and I would try to talk with some of the guys, and they couldn't care about it like I did. They'd be, oh yeah, where is that? What's going on? It was like, it didn't matter to them. Whereas to me, it mattered. I mean, these were my friends. These were people that I had lived and loved with. And they're dying, and you don't care? It's on the other side of the world, man. I got my own problems. I think that what concerns me is that there's many Christians who are unaware of the spiritual battle that's going on. They don't care about the spiritual battle that's going on. Maybe they're lulled into a complacency that's going on. And so they're not engaged. They're not fighting the good fight. My other fear is that maybe there are some Christians who aren't really prepared, and so they become unnecessarily a casualty of the war. And that's sad. To see somebody who is wounded and hurt unnecessarily. I mean, life is tough enough as it is, and we all go through battles. I mean, nobody would fault me for getting shot 3 times. I make a joke about that. You know, I've seen some guys who were wounded and became casualties because they did silly things, like playing with a grenade, trying to disarm a booby trap after they've had 6.5 cans of beer, something like that. You know, those guys were foolish. But my goal and my purpose in trying to sharing with you tonight these 3 things is to help prepare you better for the battle, to help you fight the good fight, and maybe to encourage and motivate you to become aware of the battle that's going on and join, because we do need you. As I said this morning, we need leaders because the battle is raging. And our country is changing. Society is changing. Christians need to be out there in the battle. So, that's my introduction. 3 things that you have to watch for in your life to help you fight the good fight. 3 things that if you're not careful, these things will undermine your ability to fight, and you will end up as a casualty of the war, sitting in a hospital bed, on the sidelines, looking or reading about the war, not being able to be part of the war. The first thing is pride. This is a particularly tough one for me, and I'm not talking about a healthy confidence that you have, you know, not a healthy confidence that's built upon the strengths of who you are in Christ, you know, the awareness that you have of who you are and what Christ can do for you. I'm talking about the pride, the kind of pride that where you lift yourself up at the expense of somebody else. I'm talking about the kind of pride that says, not my turn, you know. I'm talking about the kind of pride that says, you know, I told them it wasn't going to work that way. I told them. Rather than trying to help that person, what can I do to make you look better? You just stand by and you watch somebody fail, and then you say, I told them. If it was me, I would have done it differently. Not my turn. Not part of my job description. Or the kind of pride of, God, I think you made a mistake here. You know, I think I could do that job better than they can. Or the kind of pride that says, God, I'm ready. I'm ready to go. Put me in, God. Why aren't you using me, God? I'm ready. That kind of pride is found in Isaiah 49, verse 2. He says, He has made my mouth like a sharp sword. In the shadow of his hand has he hid me. He's made me a polished shaft, and in his quiver hath he hid me. As I read that, I could think, what's going on there? What's he talking about? And I could identify. I said earlier this morning that there was a time in my life when I probably could have got up and talked about, yeah, these were the things that I'd done, and that was pretty good. And maybe I deserved a Medal of Honor, but I've learned that it's not about me. It's about God and what God has done. And that's why I wear the medal. This verse right here tells me that, and I experienced this in my own life after I became a Christian. God, you made my mouth like a sharp sword. I'm ready. I've got the knowledge, God. I've got the desire. I've got the skill. But you've hid me in the shadow of your hand. What are you doing, God? I can be out there doing all these great things for you. You've made me like a polished shaft. I'm a straight arrow. I'm strong. Put me in your bow and shoot me. I'll be sure to hit the mark. But no, God, you've put me in your quiver. Why? Why are you using me, God? There was a time I really struggled with that. And that was pride. And I found myself hidden in the quiver of God for a long time. Pride will take you out of the battle. Pride will keep you in God's quiver. You've made my mouth like a sharp sword. In the shadow of your hand, you hid me. You've made me like a polished shaft, but you put me in your quiver. I thought I was going to be doing such great, great things for God. After all, he gave me the Medal of Honor. It was an open door. Didn't happen, though. And I became prideful. I didn't share it much with people, but inside I was struggling with that. You know, God, what's your plan here? You know, I listened to that person. Gee, I've said those same things, God. Yeah, I could do a better job than that. No, that's pride. And that's going to keep you on the sidelines. That's going to keep you out of the battle. I've learned that in God's plan, there are no small, insignificant tasks. God had me where he had me for a purpose. I thought he was hiding me. He wasn't hiding me. He was teaching me. He was helping me learn. There were people in my life that were having an influence on my life. And I may not have been doing things the way I thought God ought to be doing them, but it was his plan. And I had to learn to trust in his plan. I had to learn that in God's plan, there is no small, no insignificant job. I had to learn like David, where he said in Psalm 84, God, I'd even be a doorkeeper for you. I'll be a doorkeeper at your tents, God, because I just want to do anything I can for you. David had the right heart. For a long time, I didn't have the right heart. I had a boastful heart. I had a prideful heart. And it kept me out of the battle. I also learned that, and this was given to the man who led me to the Lord, when he heard that I was being awarded the Medal of Honor, he called me up because he had a sense that maybe I needed to hear this piece of advice. He said, Gary, if God has called you to be a servant, don't stoop to be a king. Gary, God has called you to be a servant and doing anything else but what God has called you to do, you will be stooping. It'll be lower than the expectations that God has for you. Even if it means being a king in somebody else's eyes. If God's called you to be a servant, don't stoop to be a king. In God's plan, there is no insignificant job. There is no insignificant place. Even in the shadow of his hand, even hid in his quiver, there's a purpose for you. And I've learned to not complain about it. But where I am, draw close to him and worship him and love him. I've learned to be still and to see him. I've learned to say, God, what can I learn about you? I want to know you. I want to draw closer to you. There are times when you are find yourself in those places that you will learn things, you will experience things, you will meet people that you would never have met anywhere else. On our cancer journey, as hard as it was, wishing we could have been somewhere else, we have met people and had a chance to be comforted by people, had a chance to comfort people that we never would have met had we been anywhere else. In God's plan, there are no insignificant jobs. There are no insignificant tasks that God wants you to perform. If He's called you to be a servant, don't stoop to be a king. Don't complain about what you're being asked to do. Do it wholeheartedly as unto the Lord. Be still. Love Him. Serve Him. And wherever you are, you are going to have opportunities to do something, to be somebody, to help somebody that you will never, ever have if you were anywhere else. And then don't be deceived. If you're not going to do it here, you're not going to do it there. I see that a lot with people who finish a particular group of training and they're going, like I did, I'm ready. My mouth is like a sharp sword. I'm like a quiver, I'm a polished shaft. I'm ready to go. And then He keeps you right here. And you, because you're disappointed, because you're hurt, because you feel rejected, we sit and we sulk and we don't do anything. If we don't do it here, we're not going to do it if He puts us over there. Don't be deceived with that way. And what's an antidote to pride? Just looking at Jesus. Humility. The man that led me to the Lord one day, he said, Gary, you want a definition of humility? Look at Jesus. That's how I would define humility, is just keeping your eyes on Jesus. And that's a tremendous antidote to pride. And pride is probably one of the biggest things that will take you out of the battle. Pride is one of the biggest things that will make you a casualty right away and make you ineffective, undermine your ability to battle. Second one is fear. It's closely related to pride, the more I thought about that as I was preparing for this. Because there's not too many of us that are in situations where we're threatened with life or death situations by our service. You know, not too many of us are in those kinds of situations. But the fear that we feel is probably more related to being embarrassed or feeling some kind of rejection or feeling some kind of disappointment. You know, there's not many of us that are in a life or death situations in our service for the Lord. But fear, nevertheless, is something that'll take you out of the battle. Isaiah 41, verse 10. Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen you, yea, I will help you, yea, I will uphold you with the right hand of my righteousness. One of my favorite verses to help me deal with the fear that I feel. And there are plenty of times I feel a lot of fear, and I have to draw on this verse. I was down at West Point Thursday, and I told them that, you know, because I was comparing a lot of the things that I was saying to them with things that I had learned in the seventh grade classroom. And I told them, I hope you're not feeling slighted that I'm grouping you with a group of seventh graders. I said, but hey, they're tough. I've said that if you want good training for combat, you ought to spend 2 weeks in the seventh grade classroom. There's nothing like middle school classroom that'll teach you about fear and about dealing with combat and instilling a sense of confidence in your abilities. Middle schoolers are tough. You have to earn their respect every day. It was like Vietnam. Vietnam was frustrating because some of the guys from Afghanistan that I was talking about felt the same way. You'd win a hill today or you'd be in a battle and then you come back a year later and you're doing the same place. You're fighting the same place, trying to do the same thing. You're trying to regain the ground you already had. And that was so different from World War II and Korea. You're always trying to reconquer and regain what you lost. It's like that with middle schoolers too. You have a little bit of respect and with them the first day, and the second day you come back, you got to do it all over again. And that's fearful. But fear, as I've already shared, fear is a battle that you will fight and you will lose, or you will win it in your heart and in your mind. That's where the battles are fought, for fear, whether it's on a battlefield or in a seventh grade classroom or at a prison ministry or working with the young people downstairs. Where you are going to fight that fear is in here and here. What happens with fear and how it works and how it will take you out of the battle is that you'll start to fear a little bit, and then you'll start to doubt, and then you'll doubt your abilities. You'll doubt your competencies. You'll doubt, my gosh, am I going to be okay in this? I don't know if I'll be able to do this okay. And then you'll start to panic. And then once panic sets in, you'll start to have mistakes. And then once mistakes start to happen, you'll become very ineffective. That's the progression of how fear will undermine your ability to battle and take you out of the battle. So what combats fear? Training. What I said this morning, what works in training works in a battle. I gave you some verses this morning about training your heart. And how's your training going? Proverbs 4:23 says, guard your heart with all diligence. Psalm 119, hide thy word. I've hid thy word in my heart, Lord, so that I won't sin against you. Let the mind of Christ be in you. Train your heart and your mind. That is the best antidote to fear. It's a remarkable thing about fear and about fearing God. I found this quote. It says that if you fear God, you will fear nothing else. But if you do not fear God, you will fear everything else. It's a remarkable thing about fear. Fear God, and you'll not fear anything else. But if you don't fear God, everything will be fearful to you. God, 2 Timothy says, God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of love and of power and of a sound mind. To not know that makes you susceptible to panic and doubt and will make you a casualty of the war, and you'll be unable to fight the good fight. Fear will take you out of the battle. 1 John 4:18 says that he that fears is not made perfect in love. As you continue to prepare your heart and your mind for the battle, love will continue to grow. Your heart and your mind will become perfect, become more mature through the love and through the word of God. He that fears is not made perfect in love. Paul has a tremendous secret about dealing with fear. 2 Corinthians 1:9, he said, this is the easy thing to do with fear. Sure, I've been in a lot of situations that were fearful. Now, Paul was somebody who could fear because he was going to get physically hurt. He shed blood, and he's fearful. But he said, you know how I deal with that? Easy. I carry around in my body the sentence of death. That's it. You can't hurt a dead man. I'm already dead. I carried around in me the sentence of death in my life. You can't be hurt if I'm a dead man. And carrying around the sentence of death in myself allows me not to trust in myself, but I trust in God who raises the dead. A sure antidote for fear: training and carrying around the sentence of death in yourself. Remember, they can't hurt a dead man. And as Galatians says, I am already crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, but not I, but God liveth in me. The last thing that will definitely take you out of the battle, and this is another tough one, it's unfaithfulness. Remaining unfaithful, or being unfaithful. And as I look at society, and as I look at the families, and as I look at the children who are being raised by families, and not just Christian families, you know, society as a whole, the way we are raising our children, this is what's killing us. People are unfaithful. But it's not, you can almost say it's not their fault because they don't know what to be faithful to, because our society has no more standards. There are no more absolutes. So you got this, it's like trying to remain faithful to a piece of jello. You know, it flies all over the place. Unfaithfulness, though, is something that will take you right out of the battle, will make you a casualty right away. Luke 16 says that he that is faithful in that which is least is also faithful in that which is much. Faithfulness is a tremendous, tremendous quality in a soldier. Timothy, you want to fight the good fight? Do not allow pride to be in your life. Timothy, you want to fight the good fight? Don't fear. Carry the sentence of death in yourself. And Timothy, you want to fight the good fight? Remain faithful. Remain faithful to what you know is true. As I look at many Christians who fall by the wayside and who become casualties, and I've been around for a while now, 1972, I've seen a lot of casualties. I've become a casualty myself. And I see how each of these things has played a role in somebody becoming wounded, somebody becoming ineffective, somebody lying along the roadside, bleeding and unable to be in the battle. Because either they were prideful, they were fearful, or they were unfaithful. I've been trying to learn more about this unfaithfulness myself and study it, and I come to believe that the source of unfaithfulness is apathy. Coming to that point where you just don't care. I don't care. And you see apathy work in people's lives when they say, they're given a task to do, and they will go ahead and they'll do it, and they'll say, that's good enough. You know, nobody's going to know. I remember when I was putting on my uniform one day, and this was after I'd gotten out, and there was a certain way you were supposed to tie your boots and then tuck them into the top. Attention to detail. You know. And this guy that was there watching me, and he goes, oh, were you airborne? You must have been an airborne unit, huh? And I go, yeah, how'd you know? And he goes, yeah, you just really pay attention to all those small details, you know? Apathy has not, there are certain areas of my life where apathy hasn't stuck in. There's certain area in my life where it's just good enough has not taken over my life yet. There are still certain standards that I adhere to that were instilled in me in the military. My wife gets upset with me sometimes because of that. I have to have my hangers lined up a certain way. All the hooks got to be facing a certain way. You know, things in my drawer have to be folded a certain way. These are things that are important to me. Not that I expect her to do it. I do it. But she just says, why? You know, I don't know. It's something that's been instilled in me. And I have to remain faithful to that. It's part of who I am. It's part of what makes me me. I don't want to become apathetic, because as soon as I become apathetic, I start not doing my best. And I start performing to the level of, it's good enough. Nobody's going to notice. People who do the vacuuming and the cleanup, you know, may not go to a certain spot or move a certain thing to vacuum underneath it because they say, it's not good. It's okay. Nobody's going to look under here. But whatsoever you do, do it as unto the Lord. Apathy is a terrible, terrible thing. And the subtlety that it has in your life in undermining faithfulness is devastating. Apathy erodes faithfulness. Now, I don't want you to confuse faithfulness with performance. There's a difference between being faithful to something and then just doing something as a performance. And I referred to that this morning when I was talking about that weightlifter, you know, who had a beautiful physique. He became a Mr. Universe. And his life was just a show. The kind of faithfulness that I'm talking about that will make you effective and help you fight the good fight is not the kind of faithfulness that's just a show. It's a performance. But the kind of faithfulness that I'm talking about is the kind of faithfulness to say, would you do that if nobody else even knew that you were doing it? Would you do that if nobody else were around except you and God? Or are you succumbing to the belief that it's okay? I mean, it's been 20 years since I've been doing this. I'm just going to let off a little bit. Apathy will erode your ability to remain faithful. I was looking for an example to really illustrate this. And so I was doing some reading on the internet, and I came up with what I believe is an awesome, awesome example about individuals who remain faithful to a standard because it's part of who they are. And it's not just a show for them. And I'm talking about members of the 3rd Infantry Regiment. They're stationed at Fort Myers. Their job is to guard the Tomb of the Unknown Soldiers. I don't know if you've ever been down there to watch the changing of the guard. But if you want to be awed by something, if you want to be awed by men who are trained and who perform their duty, you should go down there and watch the changing of the guard. And the miracle, the beauty of that is that they do that 24/7, 7 days a week. They do that whether there's people watching or not, because that's who they are. That's their duty. I came across this article, and it says that the 3rd Infantry Regiment at Fort Myers has the responsibility for providing ceremonial units and honor guards for state occasions at the White House, social functions, public celebrations, and interments at Arlington National Cemetery. So they're the very formal unit that does all the fancy jobs, the real show jobs in Washington. If you need somebody to make a good impression, you get somebody from the 3rd Infantry Regiment. Plus, they also stand a very formal sentry watch at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. The public is familiar with the precision of what is called walking post at the tomb. And what that is that they walk 21 steps south, they turn around and walk 21 steps north. That's walking the guard. They do it in the winter, summer, fall, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There are roped-off galleries where visitors can form to observe the soldiers and their measured step and their almost mechanical, silent, rifle shoulder changes. They are relieved every hour in a very formal drill that has to be seen to believe. Some people think that when the cemetery is closed, that the show stops. Doesn't. First, to the men who are dedicated to this work, their job is not a show. It's a charge of honor. The formality and the precision that continues uninterrupted all night. During the nighttime, the drill of relief, the measured step of the men on duty sentry remain unchanged from the daylight hours. To these men, these special men, the continuity of this post is the key to the honor and respect shown to these honored dead. The tomb is never left without an honor guard. Never. Symbolic of all American unaccounted for and American combat dead. The steady rhythmic step in rain, sleet, snow, hail, hot, cold, bitter cold, it goes uninterrupted. And uninterrupted is the important part of the honor that's shown. And this is an article from the Texarkana Press Gazette. It was an AP article that I'm reading. Last night while we were sleeping, the teeth of Hurricane Isabel came through this area in Washington and tore up everything. There's thousands of trees that were down, power outages, traffic signals were out, roads were filled with downed limbs. We have flooding, and the place looks like it has been the impact area of an offshore bombardment. The regimental commander of the 3rd U.S. Infantry sent word to the nighttime sentry that they could secure the post and seek shelter from the high winds to ensure their personal safety. There's a shelter that's there, like a little sentry box. And during the storms or things like that, they have the option of standing in the shelter, remaining at attention, but standing out of the elements. They have that option. So the regimental commander called them up and said, "You have permission to do this." They disobeyed the order, the sentries. During the winds that turned over vehicles and turned debris into projectiles, their duty, their measured step, continued. One fellow said to the reporter, "I've got buddies getting shot at in Iraq who would kick my butt if word got to them that we let them down. I sure no have intention of spending my Army career being known as the idiot who couldn't stand a little breeze and I shirked my duty." Hurricane Isabel, a little breeze. In a time in our nation's history when spin and total lies seem to have become the accepted standard, there beat hearts that fully understand that devotion to duty is not a part-time occupation. While we slept, we were represented by fine soldiers who fully understood their post orders and proudly went about their assigned responsibilities, unseen, unrecognized, and they were in the finest tradition of the American soldier. I was speaking down in Taylorville, Illinois, and I happened to notice a little lapel pin on a guy, and I recognized that it was a lapel pin. Those who serve in the 3rd Infantry Regiment and walk the tomb, they get a little lapel pin. I went up to him and I asked him, I said, "Yeah, I hear a lot about that." I asked him about this. I said, "Did that really happen?" He goes, "Yeah." He said, "Actually, we weren't told, we weren't ordered to leave our post." He said, "But none of us wanted to. We had a duty to perform. It was our duty. And we remained faithful to that duty." So I went and I looked a little bit more, and he told me, and all of a sudden he recited this thing to me. And what he recited was called the Sentinel's Creed. This is the creed that they live by. You ever heard of the Apostles' Creed? This is the Sentinel Creed for the 3rd Infantry Regiment men who guard the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. "My dedication to this sacred duty is total and wholehearted. In the responsibility bestowed on me, never will I falter. And with dignity and perseverance, my standard will remain perfection. Through the years of diligence and praise and the discomfort of the elements, I will walk my tour in humble reverence to the best of my ability. It is he who commands the respect I protect. His bravery that made us so proud. Surrounded by well-meaning crowds by day, alone in the thoughtful peace of night, this soldier will in honored glory rest under my eternal vigilance." That's the creed that they live by. That's the creed. He said, "You know, we recite that to ourselves when we're walking." Because I said, "What do you do every hour?" You know, because they do. They go out there. They get changed every hour. In the summer when it's really hot, it's every 30 minutes. And then during this time that the cemetery is closed, the guards change every 2 hours. But that tomb has been guarded every minute of every day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, since 1937. Isn't that amazing? You want an example of faithfulness? Do you think somebody who became apathetic would last long in the 3rd Infantry Regiment? Faithfulness, devotion to duty, the Sentinel's Creed. After I read this, I said, "God, I need a creed for my own life. I need a creed, a standard that will help me perform my duty. I need a creed, I need a standard that will help me fight the good fight, that will keep me from becoming proud, that will keep me from being fearful, that will keep me from being unfaithful, that will keep me true in the performance of my duty to you." I don't have that creed yet. But in going back and looking over this stuff again, it's something that I would like to do. Maybe you should try something like that. What's the creed that you live by? What is the standard of performance that is in your life, in your duty to Christ? And again, it's not an unhealthy, ego-oriented, better than anybody else kind of thing I'm talking about. But I'm talking about a commitment. I'm talking about a devotion to duty that comes from a heart that's given totally to Christ. From a heart that's filled with the Word of God. From a mind that's drenched with the love of God. I think we need a creed, Christians. I think we need a creed to help us fight that good fight. I believe that creed would require, first of all, an emptying of self, of our arrogant pride. That arrogant pride that says, "Man, I'm too good for this job." It requires an absence of fear that will be replaced by a heart and mind that through training has become steadfast and unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. I would want my creed to also be void of any apathetic attitudes that would produce unfaithfulness in my life, or that would produce excuses for a job that was poorly done, or a task that was entrusted to my care and I sloughed it off. That's what I want my creed to contain. That's as far as I've gotten, though, so far. That's my creed. I'm going to be empty of self, no arrogant pride that says I'm too good for this job. I'm going to have no fear because it's going to be replaced by a heart and a mind that through training has become steadfast and unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. I'm going to have a creed that will have all apathetic attitudes removed. I'm not going to have any kind of excuses for a job that's poorly done. God, may you help me develop that kind of creed. But more importantly, Lord, may you help me have that kind of character in my life. As I said, my purpose tonight was sharing that with you to encourage you to fight the good fight. Christian, we need you in the battle. Do not allow pride. Do not allow fear. Do not allow unfaithfulness to make you an unnecessary casualty in the war. As I said at the beginning, Lolly and I do want to thank you again for the warmth, the love, just how the touch on our hearts that each of you have had during our stay here. You have made us feel more than welcome, and you have definitely made this place feel like a home. Thank you.